Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a special edition of the Basketball Fiends podcast, brought to you by the RS Gina Podcast Network. I am Alex Aguilera, per usual, of course, but with me is a guest, our very first guest, Manuel, the kids call him Manny Gomez, straight out of Washington Heights, New York. Manny, how's it going?
Holla. What's up? What's up? Let's go Knicks.
Hey, what can you expect, man? He's not gonna be some Nets fan. They were in Jersey for the longest.
Well, actually, I'm gonna drive this car off the road right off the bat and just say that I'm rooting hard for the Hawks just to justify that first round loss for the New York Knicks.
Ah, okay. All right.
Let's go Hawks. As annoying as Trae Young is, we call him the Atlanta Goblin over here.
Really? He's got a villain nickname already? I haven't heard that.
Yeah. Let's go Knicks. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. But Manny, you have the great distinction of being our first guest. So real quick, how does that feel, man, to be our very first guest on the Basketball Fiends?
It's amazing, man. Especially a basketball podcast, considering that I think my area of expertise is baseball. I always say this on our podcast, the Bodega Baseball Podcast. Go check it out. RSKina Network. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. I always say that basketball was my first love, but unfortunately, I fell in love with the New York Knicks, and they've been horrible for the better part of 2 decades. So, and during that time span, the Yankees have been amazing. So, and I grew up in New York, like you said. So my love, I cheated on basketball with baseball, and then I fell in love with baseball and, you know, left basketball in the dust. But now the Knicks are relevant again, so I'm starting to get back into it. Thank God. I guess you can call me a fair weather fan. Hopefully not. I don't know.
All right. Hey, you know what? That's fair enough. Hey, it's rough to be a Knicks fan. I mean, my uncle wouldn't know it too. He's from New York, so, hey, man, I get it. I can't complain too much. I was born right off all the MJ glory of the Bulls.
Oh, my God.
And we had our little stint with Rose and them, so you know what? I can't complain too much. So
no, man, 20 plus years of literally pathetic basketball, it'll really do something to you. Like, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, it is what it is. It sucks, but things are getting better. And you know what? The Clippers are in an interesting spot right now. They're up 3-2 on the Utah Jazz in the semifinals, playing for a spot to play for the Phoenix Suns. But they are without Kawhi Leonard, mm-hmm. who suffered a knee injury, which they fear may have had an ACL injury. We aren't 100% sure whether or not the severity of his injury, but they're fearful that it could be a lot worse. And look at that, your iPhone already knows it.
Yep.
He's like, he's talking about Kawhi and the injury. He's like, all right, let me get in.
So my iPhone's like, wait, Kawhi? Wait, maybe opt out? Knicks? That's what it always goes back to.
Yeah. But, I mean, Kawhi Leonard, probably like the biggest reason why the Clippers have some type of success. I mean, people could argue that they've been underwhelming, which is, there's truth to that. He's averaging 30 points, close to 8 rebounds, shooting 57% from the field in this year's playoffs. And he's putting up about 27 points, 7.5 rebounds, and still like 50% from the field against the Jazz in this series. So a big part of this Clippers success and why they're up 3-2. But you also got to mention Paul George. He's playoff P now, because he's putting up some numbers. He's put up at least 30 the past 3 games, I want to say. And he looks like Indiana Paul George of old. So, Manny, just a question for you. Do you think the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard, can they, you know, pull off this series win against Utah? And could they, you know, give Phoenix some trouble if they were to move on?
I think fortunately they're up 3-2 in the series. And with Paul George, 37 points in his last game, 16 rebounds, 5 assists, incredible performance. And Kawhi too, they were almost starting to click again, it seemed like. And it was at the worst time that this injury could happen. And unfortunately, I do think that the Clippers could get past Utah in this series. you know, they just have to win one more in advance. But I don't think, you know, unless CP3, which we're going to get into in a few minutes, unless his COVID protocol extends into that series and takes over, I don't think the Clippers have a chance, unless Kawhi comes back, of course.
Okay.
And he's back to, and if he comes back and he's back to normal, if he comes back and he's James Harden with the Nets, kudos to him, by the way, 46 minutes on one leg, essentially. If Kawhi comes back and he's James Harden and that, you know, in his last appearance with the Nets, I don't think the Clippers have a chance. If he comes back and he's 100%, then I'm team Clippers again.
Okay. You know what? That's fair. All right, that's fair. I totally get it. So now, just
I do know that you're a Suns guy. I've been listening to the podcast. So
I'm definitely a Suns guy for this year. I don't got to eat a pepper on the podcast, which is fantastic, because I was like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm okay with spicy food, but like, I think I said habanero or something.
Ooh.
And like, I was going to eat the pepper straight up, like with the little seeds and everything inside. Oof. So that would have sucked, but it's all good, because now the Suns are in the Western Conference Finals, and I ended up being right all along, so it's all good. But just to play a little devil's advocate real quick, and just as an argument for the Clippers, I will say just the resurgence of Paul George definitely gives the Clippers some hope. Mm-hmm. I think now sort of like that light has switched, and he's like, all right, I need to go in full gear right now, because guess what? I don't have Kawhi to help me out when I've had bad games or whatever. Because usually Kawhi, for the most part, he's a consistent two-way player. Yeah. You don't really get a lot of bad games out of him. Whereas, with Paul George, and I mean, some of the slack he's been getting, well, not some of the slack, like all the slack or whatever, I would say is kind of unfair. I mean, granted, he hasn't played up to what we've expected from him, but he has been, very recently. So I think he is in a position where he knows he has to be the Paul George of old. And now we see that he still can be that. I probably shouldn't even say be the Paul George of old. Like, he still is that guy. And then I will also mention, too, I think Reggie Jackson is an interesting X factor for the Clippers. Like, the dude has been shooting the ball very well. I don't know. Like, my mom said, it must be the glasses, or he's got some secret stuff in the locker room that we don't know about. I don't know what happened to Reggie Jackson, but he decided he wanted to be really, really, really good at basketball, and he picked a damn good time. Because the Clippers now, they have a 3-2 lead on the Jazz, and I honestly didn't expect that. Once I heard the news about Kawhi, I was like, all right, Clippers are done. Like, it doesn't even matter what Paul George does. Like, I don't think they're going to come out of this series. And now they're one win away, so, we will see. So, but you're calling it, you say Jazz can pull it off in a game seven?
I don't think I think the Clippers will win the series. I think they're up 3-2. I think what happens in the next series is contingent on whether or not Kawhi Leonard could come back. And, I think the Jazz had the best record in the West this year, right? If I'm not mistaken. And I think they've been underestimated every step of the way. They're not the most, exciting team to watch, but clearly they're good. And I wouldn't be surprised if they win. But I just think, like you said, Reggie Jackson, Paul George, I don't know. I think Kawhi is important because he creates the space for some of these guys to be able to do what they can do, and that's going to be taken away. But I say the chances are in the Clippers' favor. I'm going Clippers in this series, but then they lose against the Suns in the next one.
Okay.
And I just want to point out one thing about Paul George, because I agree with you, and I'm sorry if I'm going off on a tangent. I warn you that this happens, man. But this year, he's having one of his best seasons of his career. If you really look at it closely, numbers-wise, field goal percentage-wise, he had a 4.67 field goal percentage. It's the best of his career. Three-point-wise, he had a 4.11 three-point percentage. That's the second best of his career. 23.5 points per game, or 23.3 points per game, third best point total for his career. So I think you're totally right. A lot of the criticism he receives is unwarranted. You do see sometimes that you're like, I know you could be better than this.
Right. And it's in big, kind of big games too, I think, which comes up even more. I say, man, not only is he playing bad, it's in a big spot.
Right. But at the same time, would the Clippers be in the position they're in without Paul George, with Kawhi Leonard alone? I don't think so.
All right. Hey, you make a very good point, but I think I'll still stick with the Jazz. That's just...
All right. You're the expert, that's just man. Me. Should we bring back that Pepper?
Nah, man. I was right. I'm all in on Phoenix, though, man. That was my take. And speaking of Phoenix, you foreshadowed it earlier. It's Chris Paul. Chris Paul, unfortunately, is out indefinitely because of COVID protocols, fortunately. So he is out for the foreseeable future. Like, we don't know. I've heard a little bit, some murmurs that he tested positive, but, you know, we don't know. What we do know is that he is out and he is not playing. But hey, the Suns are in the Western Conference Finals and they await the winner of the Clippers and Jazz series. So now, Manny, my question to you again, sort of similar to, you know, with Kawhi Leonard. CP3 has put up 25.5 points, 10 assists on 62% shooting from the field. Mm. And that man has turned over the ball like maybe once or twice in this series. Against the Nuggets, who they just played in a sweep. How big of a loss? I mean, it's a massive loss for the Phoenix Suns. But do they have enough to come out with a series victory and move on to the finals without CP3?
I think the team flows through Chris Paul. I don't think they could do it without him personally. And again, at age 35, people wrote him off, and he's probably having the best season of his career. And we're seeing him be the driving force for a team. He's not playing, you know, Robin to James Harden's Batman or whatever. But and fortunately, like you said, they've already advanced, and there's time is on his favor in his corner. If he's vaccinated, it could be a shorter protocol for him. Hopefully he is. I'm guessing he is. But I wish I knew more. I think that without Chris Paul, I don't think the Suns can pull it out.
You know, I'm gonna be honest. As much as I pulled for these Suns, and I was kind of right because they did do exactly what I said they were gonna do.
You were, man.
I'm honestly gonna be right there with you. I think CP3 was the extra boost that the Suns team needed to get to where they're at right now. Because once I saw in the bubble, I was like, man, like they just need like one extra guy to put mm-hmm. them over the top, to make them a competitive team. And once they got Chris Paul, I was like, man, like, that's it. Like, that's the guy. Like, look at what he did with OKC last year. He was there for, like, what, that one season. They came out as a 5 seed, and, you know, they made some trouble in the playoffs, man. They caused, I want to say they played Houston, mm-hmm. and they gave them some trouble in a Game 7 series. You know, they went the distance. So, you know, Chris Paul is a big reason why this Phoenix Suns team has had a lot of success this year and why they've been able to make a Western Conference Finals run. So, I mean, however long he's out, like you said, time is sort of in his favor, depending on if this Jazz Clippers series goes to a Game 7, just all the more time he needs to somehow try to come back when Western Conference Finals time approaches. We'll see. But just in my mindset, I don't think he comes back in time for definitely not the beginning of the series. If he does, I mean, it's late, and I could honestly see a scenario where the Suns are in a little bit of a hole. And when he comes back, is he going to be 100%?
Who's a ideal matchup for the Suns? Would it be the Clippers with Kawhi potentially being out, or the Jazz?
You know, it's kind of funny. I think the Jazz pull out a series win against the Clippers, but actually the Phoenix Suns have played well against the Jazz. I want to say they went undefeated against the Jazz in the regular season. And granted, that's like a fully loaded, you know, Chris Paul Phoenix Suns team. But I would maybe say it's sort of a favorable matchup to go up against the Jazz, just because they've had the most success against them. And I think just the Clippers right now, they're starting to gain some momentum, And if they do, you know, end up knocking out the Jazz, they're going to come into this Western Conference Finals, like I said, with a lot of momentum, a lot of heat. Whereas with the Phoenix Suns, they've had some rest time. And, you know, depending on how a team is, are you a team that vibes off of rest and has time to look at film and get ready for the opponent? Or do you come in from one series right to the next and, you know, you're warmed up, you're ready to go, and you're ready to play? So it's... I still think Utah would be favorable just because it would be a longer series and may give time for Chris Paul to maybe come back at some point in the series if he's able to. So I might say the Jazz.
Okay.
Just to make my answer short, even though it was kind of long.
Yeah. I think Kawhi is the key there. I think if Kawhi isn't around, I think I want to face the Clippers. I just think so. He's
That's fair. That's fair.
I think he's like Chris Paul's the driving force for the Suns. He's like the quarterback. Yes, Kawhi is not, you know, isn't the quarterback of the Clippers, but I think the team revolves around him. I think he takes a lot of pressure off of a lot of guys. And if he's not there, I think I want to face the Clippers if I'm the Suns. If he is there, I want to go against the Jazz. But I'm disrespecting the Jazz again. Here we go. Disrespecting the Jazz.
I'm being my own hypocrite.
I'm
going against my own point. But I will say just sort of one parting thought with the Phoenix Suns. I will say Mikal Bridges and Cameron Payne, I think those guys in the backcourt to sort of support Devin Booker, because I think, you know, not that Devin Booker can't. I mean, this is what he's been doing before Chris Paul showed up. He's been carrying the workload, and he's more than capable of doing it again. But I will say I think Mikal Bridges and Cameron Payne need to be guys that – really step up in this series, and I think they've had so far in this playoffs. Mikal Bridges has been phenomenal, better than what I expected. And same thing with Cameron Payne. I remember when he was with the Bulls, he wasn't doing too much, but he's found a nice resurgence in Phoenix. So I think sort of as supporting players, I think Mikal Bridges alongside Devin Booker and Cameron Payne, I think filling up those minutes, you know, in place of Chris Paul, I see them as pretty much X factors to try and sort of help will this Phoenix team against, you know, honestly, whoever they play, whether it's the Jazz or the Clippers. I think those are the guys you really need to look at if, you know, Phoenix can continue the success they've been having in this playoffs if they want to move on to the finals. And so from there, we go from one point guard, the floor general, the point guard that some people may call Chris Paul. We go to another young gun out in Charlotte. That man, LaMelo Ball, has won Rookie of the Year for this season. Even missing 21 games with a fractured wrist, the man brought the hardware home. He was not my Rookie of the Year pick. I will give Jesus some credit. Unfortunately, he's not here to relish in his in his intelligence, but he was right. He picked LaMelo to win Rookie of the Year. I had, I did not have Anthony Edwards. I had Tyrese Halliburton out of Sacramento.
Oh, Halliburton, who's good too this year.
Yeah, he came in third.
Yeah, was Anthony Edwards second?
Yes, LaMelo of course won, and then behind him was Anthony Edwards and Tyrese Halliburton.
It is kind of surprising considering that he was hurt and missed so many games. I think LaMelo Ball, I'm talking about, and I don't have Halliburton stats in front of me. I'm a big stats guy. I always have stat sheets up with me, but just looking at the stats here, Anthony Edwards played a full season, 72 games. And averaged more points per game. I think had a higher field goal. Nope, that's not true. LaMelo had a higher field goal percentage. It's a Rookie of the Year award. It's not a championship. It's almost like a... Does it really mean anything? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I mean, I kind of look at the Rookie of the Year award as sort of an indication of a player's trajectory moving forward in their career. And I will say with LaMelo Ball, I was sort of on the fence with him about whether or not he was going to succeed at the pro level. And he honestly went past my expectation. And I think even those who were high on him from the get-go when he was out at Chino Hills, when he was playing down in Lithuania mm-hmm. for a little bit. I mean, this guy just has a natural sort of pro-level vision of the basketball court. I mean, yeah. you just see it. He just has this natural feel for the game, where as soon as he walked out onto the court and played the first couple of minutes, you're like, wow, dude, this guy, it feels as if he's been here for maybe two years already. You know, he just sort of like had this natural transition into the league. And even with the missing 20 games, as you mentioned, compared to Anthony Edwards coming out of the gate, Anthony Edwards kind of struggled a little bit at the beginning of the season. I want to say the second half is where he really found his stride, whereas I felt like with LaMelo Ball from the get-go, he has pretty much been a consistent player for the Hornets. He's only been... I want to say it only took him about 20 games to enter the starting lineup. I want to say it was like 21 games or something like that. So it didn't take him long to get there. And his, I mean, his season totals, it was about 15.7 points, six assists, about six rebounds. I'm just going to round up. And he had about almost two steals a game. Like, those are solid numbers. And the Hornets ended up in a play-in situation on the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, for the longest, I mean, Charlotte, I remember when they were the Bobcats for a while, like, they just were kind of that lowly Eastern Conference team that was just kind of there. I mean, before that, I mean, the most success they had was those Alonzo Mourning, Muggsy Bogues.
Larry Johnson.
Days. Larry Johnson, exactly.
Big Mama. What is it? Big Mama? Was that her name? What was her name? It was when Larry Johnson dressed up like a grandma and would dunk and stuff. I don't know.
Oh, right. I forgot that.
Grandmama, I think it was. I can't remember what it was. I'm aging myself.
Something like that. I know what I know what you're trying to get at, and I can't remember either. But like I said, other than that era in Charlotte, like, there hasn't been a ton of success. I mean, the Bobcats made the playoffs here and there. I mean, Kemba Walker, his time in Charlotte, I mean, it was mostly just sort of individual success that he had. But as a franchise, I mean, just not much. And I think just with this pick that, you know, Jordan made in company with LaMelo Ball, I think they made a very good decision. Like, you got Rookie of the Year. And not only that, LaMelo Ball just has a very natural feel for NBA play style.
How much do you think playing in Lithuania helped him, like, transition into the NBA better? Because it is professional basketball. I don't know if it's at the same level as college basketball is here, but it's professional basketball. You're making real money. And also the fact that he had a spotlight on him because of his father being such a freaking big mouth and Lonzo and all that stuff. How much do you think that all helped him transition into the NBA much easier?
I think it definitely helped a lot, for sure. I mean, Lithuania definitely isn't up to, you know, par with the NBA. I mean, of course, the NBA is where the best come to play, but I look at the transition that LaMelo had, and I honestly compared it a little bit to Luka Doncic. Luka Doncic played, I want to say, in Spain. I think outside of the NBA, Spain is the spot for, you know, pro basketball in general. And even just outside of there, Germany, I guess, you know, Lithuania now, even France a little bit. Like, there are some European leagues out there, you know, that have some solid competition. I mean, these are grown men playing in big games out there. So just having that professional experience alone, even though it's not the NBA by any means, just having that exposure at a young age already to pro basketball in general, I think is what really helped LaMelo just have a smooth transition in his rookie year to the NBA. And I kind of compare that to Luka Doncic.
Is there a lot of, again, from a guy who's not so in tune with basketball, like, I follow it on the surface here and there, are there other players taking this path too now? Like, are we seeing this more?
Yeah, you're seeing definitely a transition where guys are foregoing college and taking the G League route now, where me and Jesus, we talked about in the previous episode about the G League Ignite, which is pretty much a player tunnel portal, whatever you want to call it, pool system where high school kids can sign.
And they can make some money and stuff, right? And play.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
They can make a couple $100,000, close to $1 million to play with the G League Ignite team. Once again, get that professional exposure and get paid as well, which is really nice. And then from there, they can enter the draft because you have to be 18. So pretty much they're playing that come and go, that 1 year in college, essentially. But instead of going to college, they're just straight up playing ball. And from there, going to the pros. Or either that, and then if not that, then maybe guys decide, hey, I'm just going to go overseas, play ball 1 year or two, however long I want to play, make some money, and then come and enter the draft. I remember the first player that I recall doing that, just for me, that I recall was Emmanuel Mudiay, that I think the Nuggets drafted. I mean, he ended up being like, okay, I think he bounced around from team to team, but people were intrigued by that move because he decided to forego college and sort of was ahead of the game and decided to play overseas, make some money, but also just gain that professional exposure before he came into the league. So I think you're definitely going to see more of that, whether it be the G League route or just players deciding to play overseas. I definitely see a lot of the pros that come with it. One, I mean, you can just focus on basketball. You don't have to worry about taking classes or anything like that. Right. You can make some cash on the side and you're making a decent buck. You know, you're coming into those leagues at 18, you know, 19 years old. So by the time you do come into the league, I mean, hopefully they make some smart money moves, save up their money. But then, you know, coming into the league, you know, they're more prepared per se, as opposed to maybe just going the college route.
Makes sense.
So with that, we talk about college and, of course, you know, the college game. They got a lot of coaches, you know, the John Calipari's, the Mike Krzyzewski's, even though he's gone.
Yeah, one more year.
Yep. So, but you know what? There's a lot of changes coming to in the NBA as well. And I think
that transition. Wow.
Yeah, man. Right. Right. I'm okay. Hey, I got to make up since my main guy. Hey, I love you, Manny, but since Jesus isn't here, he's usually the transition guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to step up my game a little bit.
No, it's good, man. It's good.
So from there, we got to talk about, and I think that because it just happened, is Rick Carlisle, who was formerly with the Dallas Mavericks. He decided to step down as the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks with 2 years left on his contract and is a part of that coaching pool of coaches that are part of the NBA now. And I'm already hearing chatter that he may go to the Bucks if Mike Budenholzer, you know, can't pull it off with the Nets. I honestly believe if, especially after what happened in game five, where Durant decided he wanted to play out of his mind, have a Rucker Parker-esque game. I always wanted to visit Rucker Park. I haven't been there yet, but I got to check it out one day.
Real quick.
Put up almost a 50-point game.
What's up? Do you think that KD, I know this isn't the topic right now. I told you I go off on tangents, but do you think KD has that kind of game without Harden being there? Because I feel like the game plan changed entirely for the Bucks, which I don't understand. I would not have focused my attention so much on Harden. I almost would have just let him do his thing because he's playing on one leg. He's not healthy, and attack KD as much as possible. But I don't want to take anything away from KD's performance, all-time performance. I think he's the only player to ever have that many points, rebounds, and assists in a game. I can't remember the exact number, but do you think Harden kind of I feel like I'm taking credit away from him, but if Harden isn't in that game, does KD have that kind of performance?
I will say yes, and just to make the answer real quick so that we can get back to the main topic.
Yeah, my bad.
It's good. No, you're all good. No, it's an interesting question. I will say still yes, because even in that game five, I mean, at times I forgot James Harden was on the floor, even though he played the majority of the game. I want to say he was out for maybe a minute or two.
46 minutes, James Harden.
Right.
46.
Right.
Yeah.
He was on the floor most of the game, and there was times where I literally kind of lost track of him because he wasn't much of a scoring factor that we're normally used to seeing. He essentially played more of a decoy, more of a playmaker type of deal. But, Durant just really took over from there. You know, James Harden just kind of gave him the ball, stepped to the side, and, hey, man, do your thing. So I think even with without James Harden, KD would have had that kind of game, because essentially that means James Harden didn't do too much for the most part.
And then on the other side, the Greek freak, I can't say his last name, Antetokounmpo. Antetokounmpo. I feel like his horrible free throw shooting almost like makes him afraid to drive the lane and attack the rim like he's supposed to. They call him the Greek freak for a reason. They were winning by 17. There's no reason why they should have lost that game. And I feel like I don't want to put the blame on him, but I felt like he wasn't putting the pedal to the metal toward the end of the game. Like he was missing passes. It was an ugly end of the game for the Bucks, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily put it on him. I would sort of more so, God, I can't speak. I would look at more towards Mike Budenholzer and sort of his coaching decision making per se in that game. Because early on, I mean, the Bucks were in control. Like you said, they had like a 17-point lead. And then from there, it looked like the Bucks decided they wanted to play a totally different style of basketball.
Yep.
And I don't know if it was Budenholzer telling, hey, Giannis, man, like shoot a three or whatever. It's like, nah, dude, drive to the basket. You're 6'11 from the three-point line. You can take like two steps and you're at the rim already. So, you know, that's where I kind of look at Budenholzer a little bit and sort of just the decision-making that he had. And, you know, honestly kind of put – I don't like to say put the blame on him, but I think, you know, you have to look at him and say, hey, man, what's going on? And you decided to switch it up, and that's where you guys ended up losing the game. And that's where maybe Rick Carlisle, since he's on the market, he may come in and swipe your job, bro, because he's up there. So he's out there. Scott Brooks, who couldn't come to terms with the Washington Wizards. So he's on the market as well. You have Stan Van Gundy, who after 1 year with the Pelicans, he's gone as well. And, of course, there's some issues going on in New Orleans about Zion and his family not being happy. I know you kind of like it because there's chatter that the Knicks may go after a big name, and Zion Williamson is a big name, even though he's only been in the league for 2 years.
And the way he was talking about the garden, at the end of the season there, he wants New York.
You want him. I don't know if he wants New York. I don't know. He just hasn't said it yet. I honestly just want to hear from the man himself to say whether or not he wants to be in New Orleans. There's always just been that chatter from his family, you know, since he honestly got drafted there, that, you know, the family didn't necessarily want him to be there. They would prefer for him to be in a bigger market like the Knicks. But, you know, it remains to be seen. But obviously just with Stan Van Gundy, I mean, just he didn't really mesh well with the players. And I don't know if that was with Zion Williamson as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well. So, but I think just sort of just trying to shift back more into the coaching changes in the league. It'll be really interesting to see where a lot of these names go. And even guys that are on coaching staffs, some women now that I would like to see take on some of these roles. Becky Hammon is a big name that I want to see coach, because Greg Popovich has been grooming her for the last couple of years now, and I'm telling you, she's ready for a head coaching position. So
that would be awesome.
I'm interested just to see just this coaching carousel that has just taken full effect, full stride in the past couple of days. I'm curious to see, I don't know, what goes down per se.
Yeah. I think the league has almost passed by guys like Stan Van Gundy. I don't think there's a place for a guy like him anymore in this league. And I've heard the name Chauncey Billups being thrown out a lot for coaching, head coaching positions. And seeing oh my God, I'm drawing a blank. Nets head coach, 2-time MVP.
Steve Nash.
There you go. I was going to
Come on.
I was
going to
say RJ Barrett's godfather.
hey, you're not wrong. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Seeing how like they almost orchestrated it for him to be the head coach. It's a players league. I could see someone like a Chauncey Billups who maybe doesn't have experience. I mentioned you saying someone like Anthony Hardaway taking a higher position. I could see something like that happening, like a completely unexpected person to take one of these jobs.
Yeah, no, it's definitely the case where you're gonna see, I think, some new names become coaches in this league, because I think you made a solid point where you said it's definitely a player coaches league, and I think that's where you didn't see Stan Van Gundy succeed, and I think that's maybe part of the reason why Rick Carlisle left Dallas. There was some chatter that he didn't mesh well with Luka, and that there was a little tension between them, and you sort of saw that with him and Rajon Rondo a couple years back. So you're starting to see this new, I guess, new era of coaching where, hey, if the players aren't getting along with the coach, if there isn't some type of relationship there where it's a player first mindset for a head coach, I mean, they're not going to be there for too long. And I think that's sort of the direction the league is going, especially, you know, just with head coaches in general. I think that's why you're starting to see a lot of shifting pieces now.
And that kind of worries me as a Knicks fan. I always drive it back to the Knicks, man. It kind of worries me with Thibs, because he is a hard-nosed coach.
And you just want coach of the year. You're fine, bro. You're fine.
No, I know. But if we land one of these stars, if Doncic finds his way out of Dallas and ends up in New York, I know it's a pipe dream, or Zion or somebody, Giannis, somebody, please come to
New York. You guys need someone so bad, man. The Knicks just need a big name so bad.
I know. LeBron dissed us, man. Like when he did that Miami nonsense here in New York, he legit, it was a diss, but whatever. I don't think those guys are going to want to play for a guy like Thibs, because he demands a lot out of you. And I think you need to be a certain type of personality, certain type of player, probably not a superstar. I think Derrick Rose was an exception, because I think Derrick Rose is a different type of player. He works hard. I'm not saying that these other guys don't, but Thibs is going to demand a lot out of you. And I think a lot of these guys don't want to be dictated to the way he operates. I think they want to call the shots now. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I just want to win. That's all.
Okay. Hey, you know what? That's fair. The Knicks have had it rough in my lifetime, and I haven't been on this earth very long. But, hey, I like what Coach Thibs is doing up there. I mean, he won Coach of the Year, and honestly, I think the Knicks are a very young team with Emmanuel Quickley, with R.J. Barrett, and then you got some former Bulls vets and Derrick Rose and Taj Gibson. So I think you have a really nice balance of young and old on that Knicks team. And honestly, I think they respond well to Coach Thibs, even though he's a little rough. We need a number one. Yeah, I think that's I think Julius Randle is getting to that point, but I think, you know, getting that big name is going to put the Knicks in a very big competitive spot in the East.
Yeah.
So with that, that's actually going to wrap up this special edition of the Basketball Fiends with Manny Gomez.
It almost took
us
to 40 minutes, man. I was trying.
Hey, you know what? It's all good. I kind of figured this might go a little long just because we had a fresh voice in the building, even though we're in two totally different locations. But very happy. Thank you for having you on the show. I appreciate you. I can't talk, man. I appreciate you coming on the show, man. I appreciate it. I'll give you like a little plug or a little spot, because you do have Bodega Baseball, which is also on the Arskina Podcast Network.
Yeah, Bodega Baseball Podcast. We try to have some guests on as much as possible, but we don't want to force it. So it's been a while, but the theme of the show is we're two Dominican dudes who grew up around bodegas, and we used to be called the Welcome to the Show podcast, and we decided to change it. Like, let's bring it back to our roots. Let's have some fun. This is what we know. And I think we're having fun. I think it's a fun podcast. I go off on tangents, obviously, but we're tightening it up a little bit. Come check us out.
Absolutely, absolutely. And with that, subscribe to Bodega Baseball. For Manny Gomez, for myself, good night, or good evening, good morning, I don't know, whatever time you decide,
whenever you're listening.
But don't forget to subscribe. Deuces.
Peace.